This is Will's Band of the Week for October 11th, 2020. Hello, and welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with Chris from Ron Swanson Studios.
Here I am.
He's back again. And David from, I don't know if we have a name for David's studio.
Well, I guess you could just call it Clinton Hill Studios.
Okay.
Makes sense.
Sounds very elegant.
It does, actually. Yeah. High class.
We actually have video of David, and he appears to be wearing some sort of a mask.
I'm wearing my bandana that I use as a mask. Wait, you guys aren't wearing masks? I'm going to have to leave the podcast. Sorry.
Yes, we're practicing unsafe podcasting here.
Fourth Bedroom Studios could be completely, a spreader. I mean, nobody better step foot in here. Same with Ron Swanson Studios. At least Ron, he's cardboard, so he can't catch the virus.
It's true. I've had him tested many times.
I'm actually... Not a joke. I'm actually tested 4 times so far. So,
really?
Really?
Yep. Just keep searching for that elusive positive. I haven't gotten it.
Is that because you've just come into contact with people you think have it?
No, it's because the parents of my grandson feel better if we get tested regularly, since we come and see them so often.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that's
keep
good.
People happy.
Yep.
Yeah. It's probably not necessary, but it makes them feel better. So what the hell?
Hope the podcast doesn't spread anything other than good music and joy.
Exactly.
Right. So still that one, I don't know if I'd want to do it every week, but now that they do the non-invasive ones, it's better.
The only one I got was it was the nasal thing, and people talk about it feels like the swab goes all the way back to your brain.
Yeah, that was the first one.
Yeah, now maybe I didn't get that particular one because they stuck it back quite a ways, but not to the point that it was really uncomfortable. So
now, wait a minute. I've only gotten the rectal ones. Are they not doing that right? Of course, I've gotten them down at the laundromat. I've gotten them down at the laundromat, so I'm not sure they're doing it right.
It was free and convenient, so that's the one you took, right?
Maybe I should actually go to a hospital next time.
Yeah.
Instead of a Subway.
Well, there's just so much stuff to cover this week. It's going to be fun, I think. First of all, I kind of did my... I'm not going to say I'm at a Chris level of media consumption, but I watched a couple things.
Nice.
First of all, I watched that Dennis and Lois movie. Do you guys watch that?
I have not seen it.
I haven't seen the film yet. I've only seen the trailers.
I think you are the one who sent us the trailer. Oh. So I looked at it and I thought, you know, this seems good. It's a super fan aging rockers who love music. So I would say that it is good, but not great. Like, it's not something that would be of much interest if you're not into the particular music they're into. But they are fans of a lot of the same music that we are. And so it's kind of cool.
I would say anyone who's interested enough in the Ramones to talk about them for 3 hours would probably be interested in that movie, because they were there at the beginning, I think.
Yeah, I don't know anything about it. I haven't watched the trailer or anything, so I'll get on. What's it streaming on?
It's on Amazon.
Okay.
And I don't know, maybe elsewhere.
They were so intertwined with the Ramones as fans that the Ramones said, "Why don't you just run the merch table?" And they did it. So.
Right. Right. There are a lot of funny anecdotes. One is they had a Ramones license plate, and it kept getting stolen. So they replaced it. They replaced it with a Mekons license plate. Nobody steals the Mekons license plate. So, you know, a lot of the artists that I'm big fans of are in the documentary. So that's kind of cool. So,
nice.
It's worth watching.
On Amazon, I started watching. There's a documentary on there about Elliot Smith. And I just started, I watched about a half hour of it, and it was bedtime, so I didn't finish it, but it seems really good, so I'm going to go back and finish that up. I recommend that for people.
Cool.
But go on, I'm sorry.
Well, the other thing I watched all of the 4 episodes of the video version of Song Exploder. Have you guys seen that?
I've only watched the REM one. I watched Losing My Religion.
Yeah, that was really good, wasn't it? I thought
yeah,
it was.
I enjoyed it.
I mean, it's like a half hour long maximum, maybe not even quite that, but it feels like a really good sort of mini documentary, right, of REM. And not just about that song, it's focused on that song, but and they have all 4 band members. There's a lot of Bill Berry in there, which was super cool because you don't see much of Bill Berry. Yeah, and
yeah,
the
he's
other
a recluse now.
Oh. Yeah.
Which one did you watch besides REM?
I watched all of them. So the first one is Alicia Keys. Second one is a guy from Hamilton musical. And then REM was the third one. And then the last one is Ty Dolla $ign. So it's a kind of variety of different genres. But they're all good. They're all worth watching. They're, you know, it's really easy to watch. It's pretty condensed, right? It's like a half hour maximum. And yeah, they go into the songwriting process. I think my second favorite one after the REM one was probably the Alicia Keys one.
How does Ty Dolla $ign put together his beats? How does that work?
Well, the funny thing about that one was that he has they focus on one song. He's got like 10 guests on his one song. It's like, oh, I had this guy come in and play this, and then I had this person come in and sing this line, and then I had this person come in. It's like, really? He knows a lot of people. But yeah, it's cool.
That actually screws up my iTunes quite a bit when it's the artist is like the artist, but then it's featuring so-and-so. And so then iTunes will split it off from the album because it's a different artist and whatever.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Come on, iTunes. Get that straight.
Well, they have so many songs where it's, you know, this artist featuring somebody else. I mean, if for that song, he'd have to have featuring and have this huge long list. So I don't even know how they do it.
Exactly.
But anyway, Song Exploder, it's on Netflix. And I had been listening to the podcast a few years ago, and then a lot of the music that he was featuring, I wasn't that interested in, so I stopped subscribing to it. So I hadn't listened to the podcast in a while, but the video thing's worth watching for sure. All right, well, for our next item, I think I have to say, Eddie Van Halen has to get the jingle.
And now it's time for the death of the week.
And I mean that in a positive way. I mean, if you're going to play the jingle for anybody, I think a classic rocker like Eddie Van Halen, I think it's appropriate. Don't you think this is one of the bigger rock and roll deaths that we've had in a while?
Absolutely.
I mean, if you look at those, you know, lists of greatest guitarists of all time, you know, he's right up near the top, like, all the time, right?
Yep. I think it's the biggest one since Tom Petty, unless we count Ginger Baker in there, right?
Probably, unless we're forgetting somebody and that's insulting them right now. But
I would say it's probably even bigger than Tom Petty, just for the fact that
Smith too.
Who?
Marky Smith from the Fall.
Oh yeah. For as long as I've been alive, he Eddie Van Halen has been synonymous with guitar playing. I mean, the two go hand in hand. He's been the most famous guitar player for just about the entirety of my life. This is a really big one.
Yeah, so we should.
It doesn't hurt that his name was actually the name of the band too.
Right? Isn't that?
I think a lot of people actually thought David Lee Roth was Eddie Van Halen for a long time.
Yeah, I think
the lead singer.
I think in their case, it definitely worked to use their last name. Of course, that was Eddie and his brother Alex, the drummer, who were Van Halens, and it worked well for them. You know, I don't know, the only other band I can think of that was cooler for using the last name was the band Schneider. I mean, that band. Oh, my God.
What?
Are you sure you're not talking about Winger?
Oh,
Kip
yeah.
Winger?
No, it wasn't Deborah Winger, huh? Yeah, it was Kip Winger. Yeah. Yeah, and then there was, I don't know, there are probably a lot of good examples. We should have researched this. Last name bands.
Well, Guns N' Roses has Axl Rose, so I don't know if that played a part in their band name, but
that can't be his real name, though, is it?
Axl Rose?
Yeah, is that?
I don't know.
Is his born name?
Right. Keep talking. I'll do a little.
Yeah. Okay. You got to check this.
Research.
Okay. In the meantime,
fans, we have Heim, if I'm saying it right.
William Bruce Rose Jr.
There you go. But the Rose is real.
Okay. Yeah, well, that's Rose is real. That's legit then. Yeah. Hmm. So the Guns were the guitar players.
Slash's real name was Gunn.
Yeah. So, okay, the first thing...
Slash's real name was Slash.
Right. Okay, the first thing I'm going to say about Van Halen is that it takes a lot of confidence when the second song on your first album is essentially a guitar solo. It's like, that's kind of thrown down the gauntlet, so we should play that number two from the first Van Halen album, Eruption.
Eruption.
Yeah, that's a pretty good taste of Eddie Van Halen, right? There'd be no mistaking. Part of it is how it was recorded, too. I mean, the immense talent, but especially on the early albums, it's just so cutting. You know, it's like heavy metal guitar, like the best it can be done, pretty much.
I'll throw in another trivia question for you. And any other bands that have survived the substitution of a lead singer?
How about the Doobie Brothers when they brought in Michael McDonald? How's that?
Yeah, I'd go for it. Definitely not Journey with the
drafting the fan.
Right, drafting the fan. I don't know that they really took off after that.
So by the time what were they? Six albums in or so when David Lee Roth left and Sammy Hagar joined?
Yeah, exactly. And I 1984.
I think they were already kind of on a downturn of kind of turning into this 80s, you know. I think it was starting to sound kind of watered down already. And maybe it was because, like with Jump, when they brought the synthesizer in, they're kind of heading that way. But in my mind, they're completely destroyed by the time Sammy Hagar joined. I honestly just don't like any of the Van Halen with Sammy Hagar. It feels like a different band, and not only the sound is mixed so differently too. If you listen to the Hagar stuff, Eddie Van Halen's guitar is all kind of washed out and more in the background, and it kind of upsets me actually because of how great the earlier stuff was.
But, so you're down on 1984?
Oh, is that the one? So, is Panama on that one?
Yes.
Panama's great. You know, that's like no denying. That's classic Van Halen. I mean,
Panama, Hot for Teacher. Sure, Jump isn't great. I mean, it's a classic song, but yeah, if you don't like the synthesizer sound, I can see where that would be odd. And then
but I'm okay with that one.
I think it's a great album. And that's really kind of when I got into them. It came out when I was 11 years old.
There's definitely a, you know, we've talked about this before, like the whole timing thing. Because like I was in high school when the first Van Halen album came out, so the timing was perfect. You know, I remember when I first heard Running with the Devil, and I heard that guitar, and I was like, whoa, my God, that's unbelievable. You know, so that's right. That's pretty cool.
1984 you know, comes out, I was 11 years old, and then to see the video for Hot for Teacher, it just yeah. it opened my eyes to 11. Many, to many, many things.
Oh, it gets, I don't know, that's kind of sick in a way, but we should play something else. What, Chris?
We know that 1984 is Chris's daughter's favorite Van Halen album.
Yes, yeah. I did. So we had the controversy a few months ago where Billie Eilish didn't know who Van Halen was.
Oh, right, right.
So I went to my then 16-year-old daughter and asked her if she knew who Van Halen was. She's like, yeah, I can name that 1984 song. That's the only title that I know. But if you played some other songs for me, I'd probably be able to recognize them. And at that point, I just jumped for joy that I had done an adequate job at parenting.
Yeah, that's great. Some of the classic rock bands, you know, the younger generation knows from video games, like Guitar Hero or something that was featured. Right. And then you're like, how did you know that song? How would you know that? Like, somebody knows Paranoid by Black Sabbath. Like, well, how would you know that? Well, it was on Guitar Hero. So, of course,
yeah,
Guitar Hero now
is
old,
turned into a big Hall & Oates fan because their songs feature so prominently in movies these days. Like, there's the movie Ready Player One has You Make My Dreams Come True, I think. And then like the Guardians of the Galaxy has a lot of like 70s and 80s music in it as well. Yeah. So
that was a theme of the movie, right? He had a tape.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, go play it. Well, let's play another one.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would root for Hot for Teacher, but play whatever you want.
Of course, we'll go with your wish, Chris. Here it is. Yep, I have to admit, I kind of cringe a little on the lyrics, but that's classic Eddie Van Halen for sure.
Yeah, so I think what that song shows just in that little part there is kind of both why he was considered to be the greatest guitarist. I mean, you have a lot of people who are, you know, technically proficient. You're like Yngwie Malmsteens and people like that who can play really fast and like just cram a bunch of notes per second, but don't really have like the soul and don't really have, the riffs and that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. Whereas he could do the technical stuff probably better than anybody. But then he also, you know, you listen to the riffs opening in that song and the riffs in like Ain't Talking About Love or Running With the Devil or any of that stuff where it's a little bit slower, but then still to have the technical proficiency. I mean, he could really do it all. And I think that's why they were so popular.
Yeah, that's... I agree. David, any particular Van Halen take you'd like to offer?
No, you know, they kind of occupy a large lacuna in my musical experience there. The early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a big gap between kind of dropped off the major guitar bands after let's say early Led Zeppelin. Didn't pick it up again for a while. So
he was much more of a Depeche Mode. he liked putting on the Ritz White Taco a lot.
It wouldn't even have been Depeche Mode. It would have been like Elvis Costello at this point or something like that.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, I think Chris made mention of this one. So let's go back and play a little bit of Ain't Talking About Love. You could probably walk into a guitar center whenever you can walk into guitar centers. Maybe you can't right now, but you know, and there's going to be somebody like playing a Van Halen riff, right? Or trying to emulate the style of Eddie Van Halen. So I think he came out with a series of amps, didn't he? There's a 5150 amplifier, I think I remember seeing.
I have no doubt he probably cashed in on some of that stuff.
Yeah.
I heard someone else make this point, but I think it's a good one. Their first album came out in 1978, and that was just about the time where punk music was kind of at its peak. You had the Ramones starting in 1976, and then I think they had four albums out by 1978, and that's kind of when Sex Pistols came over here and things were in full bloom. But the appeal of punk in a large way was that anybody could play it, right? So, you know, power chords, whatever. And people are the thing that was endearing about it was that literally anybody could do it. And then here comes Van Halen in 1978, their debut. And it's like, oh, wait a minute. Here's something that nobody can do. It's like,
right.
No, you can't do this.
Right.
So that's kind of where the paths in guitar rock diverged right there to more kind of, self-indulgent solos and things like that.
There, you mentioned Yngwie Malmsteen, you know, those guys that are the virtuosos. The other one who's always in that category is Joe Satriani, right? And I think I saw a quote from him just last week about Eddie Van Halen, and he was actually admitting that there's like stuff Eddie Van Halen would do that he can't do, you know, even technically. Mm. Like, the one technique that Eddie Van Halen was known for was the tapping on the fretboard. And with both hands, and he was like unbelievably good at that. So there you go, kids at home, practice your fretboard tapping to be as much like Eddie Van Halen as you can be. But R.I.P. He was a rock classic, and now we're going to slow things down a little, aren't we? It's a little contrast from
quite a bit
from Eddie Van Halen to indie rock veteran Sufjan Stevens, and. Well, I know you guys are both big Sufjan Stevens fans. Chris, you've been maybe the biggest Sufjan promoter on the podcast. I feel like I know that you were huge on the Illinois album. I feel like Carrie and Lowell was so great that it's hard to follow that album. So, but here he has a new album, and it's called The Ascension. And so, which one of you? I think Chris should start out with the discussion.
Yeah. So, you know, I gave this a first listen, and typically when Sufjan Stevens gets into the electronic bag, he had a 2001 album that's entirely electronic called I think it's called Know Your Rabbit. And then The Age of Ads just came out a few years ago, which I wasn't crazy about. I'm typically more of a fan of his, you know, his guitar work and Carrie and Lowell's type of stuff. And you're right, Illinois, I think, is just an absolutely brilliant album. So when I gave this a first listen and heard that it was mostly electronically based, I thought I was in for trouble. But the more I listened to it, the more I got into it, I realized it is almost a perfect melding of kind of his two styles, his more melodic, you know, acoustic type of stuff and the electronic, where he's not showing off that he can do electronics like I felt like he's done on his past albums, but they just add just the right texture and the right, you know, feel that he would have with guitars had he been choosing to use those. So, let me start off with a song just to give people an idea. Let me start with song number 12, which is Goodbye to All That.
Sufjan Stevens.
Yeah, so that would be a song that I would love if it was, you know, just him sitting there with a guitar strumming something, but the fact that it has all those bleeps and bloops and industrial noises and things like that, I think just adds more to it. So I really love that song.
Yeah, that's a good one. And it's
what Chris is saying without actually adding anything new. I was thinking about, yes, the instrumentation is completely different from the last record. And yet, in a sense, there's no difference at all, because I tried listening back-to-back, you know, A-B, to a couple songs from Carrie and Lowell, and I thought, well, this is the same. It's just the same. I'm responding to the same things. It's just, he's just got there through a different route, but there's really not anything different about the songs themselves.
How about the fact that it's an hour and 20 minutes, though? I mean, He really didn't need to make it an hour and 20 minutes, did he? I'm definitely positive on the album.
Yeah.
I like the album, but I kept thinking, you're making me work here because it's so long just to absorb it all. One thing I noticed in that last song, it's the first time I've listened to it with a decent pair of headphones, and there are these really, really high beeps and blips that almost sound like only your dog should be able to hear them. Did you guys notice that? Like really, really high. And but it also made me feel good that my hearing isn't completely gone yet, if I can still hear that.
You're saying at the audiologist they should play this album just to make sure people are still with it?
Yeah, I think it could work. Yeah.
So as far as the length goes, the way I have listened to this so far is not to listen to it in terms of like individual songs, like, hey, this is a great song or that's a great song. It kind of just runs together as just kind of a mood.
Yeah.
So I guess it just depends on how long you want to be in that mood.
Yeah, and how much
do I feel like being in this mood for 60 minutes or 80 minutes?
And how much time you have too, because then you're not going to like go run errands in your car and take that long. And I have different, it varies from week to week that in my office where I have time where I can just have something on for a while and sometimes I can't. So this week that was hard to do. And the week before, but I got through it. I would listen to it in bits, like, you know, five songs, and I'd pick up with the number six, then I'd pick up with number 12 or whatever, you know.
Well, despite my love for Supion, I have to say, I think that the last cut, how long is it?
12 and a half minutes.
I think there's too much there. And if we took that one out, just took it out completely, we'd just have a little over an hour or so, you know. Mm-hmm.
David, you want to make a pick?
Love to make a pick. My pick is what number is it? Hold on. It is number 5.
Tell Me You Love Me.
Uh-huh.
So David is the only one on video right now. So it's a joy to watch him close his eyes and listen to that song and get into it.
Yeah,
like I can feel what he loves about it.
Yeah, yeah, that was a good pick.
You could drop that song into Carrie and Lowell. Nobody would even notice that it, you know, didn't belong there.
Well, that was the point I was going to make. Is I saw him on the Carrie and Lowell tour, and he played the album just about from front to back, and then at the very end, at Blue Buckets of Gold, it reaches this crescendo with all these electronics and you know, just so loud to the point where you almost had to cover your ears just because it was so deafening. And I think that worked so well, he probably just decided to go ahead and do a whole album of it, and this would be one of those.
Right.
Well, I can make a pick, and I definitely feel like I'm falling into a pattern, and I could feel bad about that pattern, or I could just embrace it and just say,
pick number two again?
Yeah, I'm going to pick number two, because number two is good. Yep, it's called Run Away With Me. Yeah. So
I would be remiss if I didn't mention track 13, which I described as sounding like Sigur Rós covering a song by Tommy James and the Shondells. It has like a 4-minute, very ponderous instrumental buildup, and then it goes into a lyric, almost the entirety of which is, "Come on, baby, give me some sugar."
Yes, correct.
And the thing is, I actually love the song. I mean, I love the sound of it. It's just that the lyric is just so, I mean, it's, he knows how banal it is. He just keeps repeating it like as though somehow it's a, you know, it's, he's going to transcend it somehow. I don't know. I don't think he ever does. But.
That's good. Sufjan Stevens. The new album is called The Ascension, and it's worth delving into to whatever extent you want to. During that last song, I had the same...
Worth delving into to whatever extent you want to.
Yeah.
wouldn't that apply to everything in the universe?
That's kind of true. That's kind of true.
Seems pretty noncommittal.
I guess I was thinking that like it's an investment for the whole hour 20. That's how I look at it, but that... I like it, pretty much like it all, when I give it enough time. There were still a few in the middle that I hadn't quite connected with, but probably could. I'm definitely giving it a thumbs up.
I'm going to agree with you that if, you know, it could probably use a little cutting in the middle there, but, you know, whatever.
When I sent out my book to people to read so they could do the blurbs that you can put on the book,
yeah,
I was expecting them to come back like, it is definitely a book. With pages and words.
Delve into this book for just 10 pages if that's all you feel like reading.
One of the best books by Chris that I've ever read.
No, actually, one of the quotes was, "It's the funniest book of the year, depending on what year you read it."
That's not bad. Maybe like in a really weak year, it could be the best one.
Right, right. Yeah, 1924, really, yeah. Really bad year for books. This would definitely would have been number one.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So listen to this album. It took me a little bit of work to get into it, as it does probably with all of his electronic works. But it paid off. I like it just as much as I did Carrie and Lowell, which is a great album.
Well, that's saying a lot.
Yeah, which I believe that was in my top 10 of the 2010s.
Sufjan is definitely...
In my top 10 of the decade.
Wow. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think I had it too, right?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think yes. You guys both did. Yeah. So, yep, indie rock veteran. Indie rock, is he indie rock royalty? Not sure if he's quite royalty, but he's definitely well-regarded, highly respected, and cool. So, all right, should we move on? Should we go to our upstart artist? I'm going to call her an upstart. Fen Lily.
Mm.
And I think David listened to this. Did you get a chance to listen to this, Chris?
I have not listened to it at all. I just learned of this woman's name 5 seconds ago when you said it. So.
Oh, well, there was a message in there. You could have read your messages and done your homework.
I know. I got a lot going on, but yeah. I'm anxious to hear what it is. If David likes it, I'm sure I will as well.
You introduced me to her as well. I was not aware of her before last week.
She got a couple reviews in the Indie Rock Press, and then there was a mention that Steve Albini assisted in some way in the album. I think some of it was recorded in Chicago, even though she's British. So I thought, well, you know, that's interesting. And she was sort of categorized as a folk singer kind of person. And so I thought, interesting combination. I'm going to listen to it. And I'm pretty positive on it. It's the album is called Breach. And I don't, you know, the things I read said Steve Albini assisted or, you know, is somehow involved. But, you know, you don't know. They don't give the specifics. But there's one track where I always say you can tell a Steve Albini production because the snare drum sounds like a Steve Albini snare drum. So, yeah. There's a song here, and I heard the Steve Albini snare drum. I'm like, okay, I get that.
Keep listening there.
It just happens to be track two. So here
oh,
we go.
No.
It's called Allopathy. Ben Lilly, did you catch?
The comparison that I would make, actually, is to our good friend Soak.
Oh, sure.
He
yeah.
had a first album that was kind of very folky and very emotionally intense, but very, musically not very stripped down, right? mostly acoustic. And then the second one kind of broadened out into, you know, getting a band behind her, and it's very, very different. And I think the same thing happened here.
It's her second album.
That song, 10 seconds into it.
Oh, good, good. You probably the Albini snare drum caught you, right?
Yep. 10 seconds in, I'm like, I am 100% sold on this. I'm buying season tickets.
Yeah, it's the second album that she's got on the streaming services. I'm not sure. There may have been one or two others, but and I had never listened to the first one. So, David, maybe you're in a better position to compare them.
No, you, as I said, you were the one that introduced her to me. But now, when I look back at the discography, that's what I'm hearing. So, you know, big jump, I think, on this record.
So, David, your turn to make a pick.
I'm going to go with Berlin, which is, what is that, number five?
That's Berlin's number three.
Oh, sorry, number three. Chris on the video now.
Yeah, I jumped in.
Really? Oh, yeah, there he is. Wow, such a professional-looking studio.
Yeah, with my treadmill right behind me.
All right, I'll turn mine on, too.
There you are. Hey. Look at us.
That's Fen Lily, and the album is called Breach. And, she's a very promising young artist, I would say.
Totally.
Oh, here's some breaking political news, Chris.
Oh, boy.
Trump just got endorsed by the Taliban. Oh, God. All right.
Is that really one of those endorsements that you want?
Yeah. Maybe not.
Yeah. Probably not putting that sticker on your lip.
I wouldn't think so.
Like being endorsed by NAMBLA or something.
Well, I don't want to delve into politics too much, but I actually didn't think it was real when 4 years ago I got a robocall from a white supremacist supporting Trump. I'm like, what's he trying to do? They're trying to, it's got to be a prank by an opponent. But it was actually, I think, real. So it's unbelievable. All right, back to Fen Lily. I'll pick another one. Unless Chris wants to pick a random number. But that's not good enough music journalism.
No.
Let's
My
play.
My rule is if song number 7 on any album is good, then it's a good album. But
yeah,
that's a standing rule. But go ahead and pick some.
I'm gonna
pick the picture of the person who has the most professional look, and that would be Will right now with his microphone. It's just
absolutely
so
it's pretty professional. I sometimes think I should get one of those stands, you know, like real studios have, like so that the mic is sort of suspended in a nice fancy thing. So I don't know. Maybe someday I'll do that. Only been doing it this way for 10 years, you know. All right. Let's play number 5. It's called I, Nietzsche.
You threw me up against a wall. My hair was longer. Now we talk less if at all. I rarely get that hunger anymore.
Kind of a slow build there.
Yeah, another strong one.
Fen Lily, check her out. There are a few tracks that are a little more stripped down acoustic, and then a couple more that have a little more rocking going on. So pretty good overall. The album is called Breach, and there we go. We have now completed our agenda.
Chris seems to be under attack by someone.
Really?
Yeah, here in the basement, a lot of different sounds going on. The dog barking and regular life interfering. They should know we are podcasting. What's going on?
You need that sign like we used to have on the door that said podcast in session. But yep. So I don't know what happened to it. It was in tatters for a while, and we had it taped up, you know, in kind of ripped up form, which made it cool. And then I don't know what happened to it. So
yeah, I posted it on my Instagram. There's a button on my microphone, and when I press it, it blinks, and I thought that meant the microphone was muted, and apparently it's not. So if you heard me do a lot of crazy stuff earlier in the podcast, I thought I was muted, so my apologies.
Everything, all the embarrassing things you said, you intended to be muted, and now they're out for the world to hear.
Well, that part where Chris endorsed the Taliban,
I'm going to listen back to this podcast. I'm not going to be in it at all. It's just going to be you and David talking. You just cut me out completely.
I have a high technology way of that we can hear you, but it's not actually your voice isn't being recorded.
I think that's probably for the best.
All right. Well, I think that was pretty good. Greater than $0. I think we gave Eddie Van Halen his due, hopefully. Unless people
it was
think
definitely a podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
I can confirm that much.
People can listen as they wish. Turn it off after 1 minute. Like, oh my God, these guys are terrible. All right, well, thanks. Anything else? Any parting words? Anything else that needs to go out to the internet, to cyberspace?
Nothing that I know of.
This one might clock in under an hour. It's going to be a well-oiled machine of a podcast.
We keep things moving.
I think podcasts that we do that are like 52 minutes or so are pretty good. But I also don't mind just rambling because you got to have that variability. You got to have that spontaneity. So
yeah, the Ramones one that I did was 3 hours long. So I mean, it was 2.5 hours recorded, and then they added in a bunch of music and that tacked on another half hour. So
wow,
I mean, we can try to beat that if you want.
Yep, someday.
You want me to go on and on about Dee Dee Ramone's rap career? I can give you 20 minutes on that at least. As D.D. King, which is just appalling.
Hey, wait a minute. I just realized something. You know, I'm holding this microphone talking about getting a fancy mic stand, and you have one, Chris. Look at that.
Well, no, it's not a mic stand.
Your mic's on a stand, and you don't have to hold the mic, right? And you've even got a windscreen in front of it.
Yeah, I sure do.
That is pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's high tech.
Yeah.
Both of you guys look professional, and I look lame. So there you go.
You look pretty good. You look relaxed, and it's very colorful. You know, you've got colorful pillows around you. That's cool.
Yeah, I try and get a little contrast there between the shirt and the mask. You know, blue shirt, red mask, red shirt, blue mask. That kind
of course, nobody at home can actually see any of this stuff.
Right.
Right.
They can only imagine how great he looks. All right. Well, we'll sign off. Every week I'm trying to arrange another podcast. I tentatively have other podcasters for next week, but we'll see if that. I don't want to promise anything too big and then not come through. So, but I have hope. So, all right, let's sign off.
Alex Van Halen lined up.
I don't know why they didn't contact us, hoping they could get on, but I never heard from them. All right, let's talk to everybody again next week with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Good night.
The Will's Band of the Week podcast is brought to you each week from Fourth Bedroom Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, with correspondents from the United States, Canada, England, and Australia. You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found. All of our episodes can be found at willsband.net. To contact us, send email to willsband@yahoo.com or find us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Our theme music was composed by Grant and performed by Grant and Will. Thanks for listening.